What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Clazo, joined by Peter Flaherty. How's it going, Peter?
I'm doing well. We talked about it a little off camera, both things that I'm going to bring up, but we are fully immersed in handbook season, so completing chapters, editing, reading it over. But it's, as always, it's going to be a really in-depth book, something I couldn't recommend enough. I'm really excited to even just read the other chapters and learn more about other systems. And then also, you've been a new football coach since our last recording. A small guy, smaller, lesser known name. It was nice to see UNC go off the beaten path and land him. Bill Belichick. I think he was a former head coach in the NFL. That's a. I'm curious to see how he translates. But no, as a New England guy and a Boston guy, people might be shocked to hear that I'm not a huge Patriots guy and not a big Bill Belichick guy. But
I need this energy in my life, Peter, because we have too many Boston fans who have been just lambasting me recently. And watching this press conference, like prior to getting on, just waiting for you to hop on, just watching like the presser that happened for UNC and like seeing Bill Belichick in UNC colors and UNC gear just pains me to my soul. So it's been a tough week. It's been a busy week. We've had that news, like you said, all the prospect handbook stuff. If I am a little less than my normal self on today's podcast, both my chapters are done, so I don't have that excuse, but I am in like the middle of editing mode for the prospect handbook, which is always fairly chaotic. So my mind feels a bit like mush right now. And then I've got the great Bill Belichick news to top it off.
So. Hey, I mean, he's the best NFL head coach of all time. I'm really curious to see how it translates to the college game, especially like this college game in the age of NIL. And it's been so crazy that we'll get into the MLB draft lottery and your first mock and all of that, but it's crazy to see now in like college football's off season, more or less outside of the bowl games and whatnot, with the transfer portal being open, like outlets like On3 and Hayes Fawcett and all of that, almost like reporting guys signing back or with new teams, like free agency, like reporting dollar figures, guys signing for like 1.1 million and whatnot. It's just wild to see. And I'm curious to see how Belichick deals with all of it, but I'm excited to have this palate cleanser of talking about the lottery and our first mock.
Yeah, no, so that's kind of what we're going to focus on today. It won't be an entirely Bill Belichick-centric podcast for us on the draft.
You'd have Jeff on. You guys could go for 3 hours. It'd be a testy one, though. I'd have to be the ref.
It'd be Jeff like just beating me into the ground, telling me why I should be excited for Bill Belichick, and me just be like, no. But no, we'll talk draft lottery. That's kind of all we have on the docket today. You can push back if you have different opinions, but I have really come to enjoy the draft lottery. I think it's a nice addition on the calendar for just draft fans in general, for baseball fans. I mean, this year's winter meetings was pretty compelling outside of anything like off the field, I guess. Like transactionally, we had a lot of big deals. We had Juan Soto, we had Max Fried, we had a huge trade. So a lot has been happening. I don't know that we necessarily needed any like random events to spice things up, but I do think just the combination of draft lottery and Rule 5 for the super prospecting nerds among us who are in the middle of December and are excited about baseball prospect things, like it's a fun addition. I thought it was cool that they had Colton Cowser on the show announcing picks. That was fun when he had a little double take when he saw the Marlins logo upside down and looked like he didn't recognize it. It was a kind of a funny moment, but I just think it's a nice piece on the draft calendar to add some excitement. I think the intention of doing the lottery to de-incentivize tanking, I think, is a good one. I think it's it makes sense. We can still quibble with some of the details and how it's done, but generally I think it's a positive experience. It's always fun to watch and see who's picking up top, who really jumps up. Like this year we've got the Mariners, but that's kind of my general sense of the draft lottery. I'm curious if you feel similarly or if you have a different opinion on it.
I'm with you. I think anything that brings eyes to the game and more attention to especially the amateur space and the draft, I think is positive in the way that they've done it. I've been a fan of. It's not the most easily accessible event, I guess you could call it, to watch, just given that MLB Network isn't offered on, you know, YouTube TV and some streaming services, but you can still follow it online, and I had a lot of fun watching it. And it's kind of really like any lot, like the NBA draft lottery, it had a little bit of a similar feel to that. You know, you have the ping pong balls, and it adds a lot of excitement because, like you said, it decentivizes tanking. And while there might be an idea and you might have an idea of what's going to happen and you really don't know for sure. And we saw it this year too, and we'll get into it more, but like the Mariners, who were supposed to pick, you know, if everything went like chalky 17th, they landed the third pick, and the, not only do they pick third, but they get a lot more draft capital out of it. So, I mean, it's a lot of fun to watch, and you know, I'm a fan of it.
Yeah. So obviously the Nationals won the first overall pick in this year's draft lottery. So the top six picks, I think this is kind of confusing to some people, even like people in baseball who are writing about baseball for a living have reached out for clarification on this, but the top six picks are technically the only draft lottery picks. All of the non-playoff teams, so the basically the bottom 18 teams are in the lottery to get one of those picks, but the top six picks in the draft lottery are Nationals, Angels, Mariners, Rockies, Cardinals, Pirates. So we did a quick, and JJ was actually in the room for the actual drawing of the draft lottery, seeing the process. This is the third year that JJ has kind of been the pool reporter to do that. It's kind of cool that BA is in the room as like an independent, eyes on, making sure everything is, I guess, going as it should go. But if you want to know like the actual details of literally how the ping pong balls fell, definitely check out JJ's piece. It's a lot of numbers, and it's maybe more granular than most people care about. Most people just want to know what the order is. But if you want to see like how the actual balls fell in the room, we've got that on the site. I did a very quick, like rapid react winners and losers piece as well. I had the Mariners as kind of beyond the Nationals, who won the number one overall pick, which is kind of what you're looking for. The Mariners, like you said, going from 17th in the order, I think they had a 0.4% chance to get the number one overall pick. So going from 17 all the way to number three was massive. I thought the Angels were also a winner because we saw this year the top two teams by draft lottery odds, the Rockies and the Marlins, they both had 22.45% odds for the top pick. Both of them slid down further than they would have in the previous system. The Rockies still sticking in the lottery at four, and the Marlins sliding all the way out to number seven. So no lottery pick at all for them. The Angels, just the fact that they jumped the teams in front of them, will be picking number two overall. I think getting an opportunity to add to an organization that we just recently had 30th overall in our midseason org rankings, I think that's a win for them and for the Mariners. They've got a great organization at this point, or great farm system at this point. They're going to get the third overall pick and the slot value that comes with that. They have the third pick in the supplemental first round as well. So they're going to be one of the bigger players just in terms of money they can throw around in this year's draft. And a great farm system now is probably going to keep getting better after they draft next year. But do you have any other obvious like winners and losers from this? I've got Marlins as a loser, and maybe the Blue Jays also. They're going down to number eight. They had the fifth best odds. They also don't land in the lottery. They're at eight overall now.
Yeah, I think you summed it up well. I'd add in the Cardinals as a winner. I think if it was all chalk, they were supposed to pick 15th or 16th, but they slid all the way up to number five. It gives them another chance, like they did last year in the first round with JJ Weatherholt, to land one of these higher end, high impact talents. And losers, I think that the Marlins are probably the biggest losers of the night. Unfortunately, they had the same odds to land the top pick as the Rockies did, and they slid all the way to 70, as you said, outside of the lottery. And I think that's a little bit of a bummer, because I think the expectation was that they would be, they had great odds for the first overall pick, but they'd at the very least be picking in the top two, three, or maybe even four. So I think that they're the biggest losers.
I don't know if it makes it might make it seem even more painful for both Rockies and especially Marlins fans, because your original odds, if you're one of the bottom three teams, are 16.5%. But because we had two teams this year, the White Sox and the A's, who are ineligible from picking in the lottery, their odds, so 26.5% total between those teams, are proportionally thrown to every other team who is still eligible. So they had better than average odds for any given year, and neither of them come away with the first overall pick. And the Marlins in particular, I think, could really use it. I mean, their system, you've got a really exciting player at the top in Thomas White, but I think the system really falls off, and I imagine it's going to be somewhere in the 20s, maybe 25 to 30 range on our org rankings when we update after doing the handbook. So they could really use an infusion of talent, and just not getting a lottery pick at all might be tough. It's a tough pill to swallow for Marlins fans, certainly. And it was there. I think we had one picture where Mike Rizzo is like talking to the Marlins rep, and he just looks so miserable that he's up here like wanting to get first and is out of the lottery entirely. So that was kind of a tough scene for him.
Yeah. So I think you can't really consider the Rockies a big loser, but where they had equal/similar odds to the Marlins to pick first overall and you quote unquote slide to fourth, I think that has to be a little bit disheartening in a way. They're still positioned well to, again, land a potentially high impact talent, but where you did have such great odds as they did, I think that's a little bit of a bummer and can kind of sour the night. And the White Sox, I think you can also throw into that bucket, not because they were ineligible for the first overall pick and ineligible for a lottery pick and prevented from picking sooner than 10th overall, just under the new lottery rules and CBA rules. But I think that in and of itself is a bummer, just given the season that they had. And then also, it was interesting to read in JJ's piece after the fact that even if they were eligible, they'd still be one of the biggest losers of the night because they would have picked 6th overall.
This is the White Sox?
Yes.
Yeah. I was actually going to bring this up and ask you if you're a White Sox fan, does that make you feel better or worse? Because I almost feel like that would make me feel better, because under the old system, you obviously are getting the first overall pick, and that'd be really exciting for you if you're like trying to look forward to better days. But could you imagine if they were eligible, if it was the same as the A's where they could get 2 years in the lottery back to back? You had this horrible season where, again, any other year prior to the system, you've known for weeks and weeks now that you had the first overall pick. It feels like it would be more of a gut punch to go from 1 to 6 that year versus you can't pick any sooner than 10th and you know it the entire season, or at least most people knew that the entire season. And then realizing that you only would have picked 6th, I put them in their own little special category, both the A's and the White Sox, as being in this cold comfort area where the A's wouldn't have been a lottery team based on how the balls came out. And then the White Sox only going to 6 maybe makes them feel a little better, but maybe you're saying this is like salt in the wound for them.
It's interesting. And that's a fun hypothetical. I think that would make me feel worse by far if I was a diehard White Sox fan.
My gut has to go the other direction. So this is good.
No. I'm saying like, I'm with you. Like this makes me feel better. If your hypothetical was like, I would much rather be in this spot, not picking sooner than 10th. You kind of know where you're at for months, as you said, rather than being in the lottery.
Heartbreak in the moment. Yeah.
Clearly having like the best odds to pick 1-1 and then you go to 6. Like that would, that would be brutal. So I'd much rather be here. And then you can kind of go forward and look at 2026 potentially. But yeah, if they were in there, and they slid all the way to 6, that would have been nuts. And then, like you said, the A's were kind of in this similar gray area, weirder spot where they also couldn't pick sooner than 10. So 11 is where they slot in. But I think overall, I'm a real fan of the system, even just getting to talk about the draft, even just if it's a little bit like this in the kind of dead of winter, not quite dead of winter, but it does make it a lot more fun and is a nice sort of wrinkle, I guess, to the off season.
It gives me an excuse to hit up some scouting directors and throw out a way too early mock draft and say, hey, what does this seem like to you? And it's mostly like, yeah, it does seem like the right name. So, I mean, we do have our first full first round mock draft. For me, any mock draft that happens before the given year's season has started on the amateur side, it's almost like it's more of a fun exercise than anything. The standards that we have set so far for these post draft lottery mocks are, in 2023, we had we had 20 of the actual 30 players. I'm butchering describing what happened. We identified 20 of 30 players who actually went in the first 30 picks in our first mock draft in 2023. In 2024, we ID'd only 15 of the 30 players. So this year, if I can do better than 50% of these top 30 players, I will be happy. That said, what are your thoughts on a mock draft this far out? I try to just reiterate to people who are reading, like, there are no team player connections at this point. No players or no teams are like seriously saying like, oh, we're taking this guy. It's far, far, far too early for that to happen. So I think the outside of it just being fun to do mock drafts, I think it is most useful in trying to just describe the top of a given draft class, because you can know reasonably far out from the draft what the top tier of players looks like. And I think the fact that we've got at least 50% in the first 2 years says something, but just don't read into it too much because a lot is going to change. Things change rapidly. Charlie Condon, I think last year we had 14, and he immediately jumped into like best player in the class category, like very quickly. Guys like Chase Burns and Haken Smith, we had them in the middle of the first round. Again, they took a step forward and jumped into like elite pitching prospects in the class, going to go really early. Guys like Christian Moore, we didn't even have in the first round. So it's not a December mock draft. Do not write it in pen. But what are your thoughts on just the process this far out? What do we know about the class? You can eviscerate my mock draft I threw out there if you want as well, Peter, if you think I had any crazy, crazy projections.
No, as biased as I am towards you or not, I wouldn't be eviscerating because you're extremely knowledgeable and your insight is Peter, invaluable. But no, you hit the nail on the head. I think it's a really fun, like, you get a fresh draft order hot off the presses. You can, it's kind of your first chance to sink your teeth into it. It is a fun exercise, and like you said, you can't emphasize it enough that it's not like there are no ties to players at this point. There's no steam surrounding certain names. It's just an interesting exercise to identify potential organizational fits.
I did change some players though. So basically the way it works for this is I try and get the 30 players I want in this mock draft, and then based on the results, I'll slide around players if I think it makes more sense, just given, like you said, different organizational fits, different organizational preferences. If the Nationals weren't picking one, I might have had a different name at number one. Right now, I've got Ethan Holliday there. But I
have to imagine if it was the Angels, it would at least be flipped one and two. I might be wrong in assuming that, but
yeah,
I think we'd see a different name at the top if it were the Angels. But I think that – oh, go ahead.
I think the default for me was to just put Jace Laviolette one regardless. And like, if there was a team that I felt needed to change it, but once the Angels were two, I was like looking at Ethan Holliday and Jace Laviolette and knowing that there wasn't like a ton of separation. And there's kind of this core group of five players that were going to be top five, regardless of the order, just based on the, like my perception of those five separation at the top of this class. But when the Angels were two and the Nationals were one, I was like, the Angels basically only take college players. Like I could see the Nationals being more likely to take a guy like Ethan Holliday than the Angels. But again, like maybe it's going to be the case that one of these players separates and is just a no brainer and the demographic difference doesn't make a difference at all. But that was like the big flip for me, is you could easily argue for Jace Laviolette one.
Just like a manager needs to plan to get that perfect matchup in the late innings of a game, you need to have a strategy to protect you and your family's future. That's why long before they ever sponsored the Baseball America podcast, I used SelectQuote when I needed to find life insurance. It was fast, it was easy, and it gave me peace of mind that I was getting the right policy at the best price possible. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers find over $700 billion of coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that may cost you more and cover you less. While SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work for carriers to get you same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you may think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to selectquote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote, they shop, you save. Get the right insurance for you for less at selectquote.com/BA. Go to selectquote.com/BA today to get started. That's selectquote.com/BA. When you're hiring, it feels amazing to finally close out a job search. But what if you could get rid of the search and just match? You can with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Indeed is the easy choice when we need to make a hire at Baseball America. It provides excellent tools to help get our job out in front of qualified candidates, and it helps me keep me organized throughout the hiring process. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, and I think in looking at potential organizational fits and intriguing pairings, I think that at this point, especially picking inside the top 10, you just got to go for the best guy on your board, whoever that may be. But Bremner to the Mariners would be a really, really fun pairing. We've talked a lot now about Bremner, but It's three comfortably plus pitches with his changeup being closer to double plus than it is plus. Slider is also trending in that direction, I think. And just given the Mariners' developmental chops on the pitching side, I think that It's a really fun and moldable ball of clay with plenty of upside that I think they could get every ounce out of. And then also looking at 1-1, Jace will certainly be in that conversation, Ethan. It's a kind of a dangerous demographic, especially up near the top like this. But man, Seth Hernandez is I'd put him in that conversation as well.
That's like the one where, like, if you look at org fits, you maybe don't want to look at the high school right-handed pitcher and project them to Coors Field. But the Rockies have not been like shy from taking pitchers early in the draft. They took Chase Dolander 9th overall in 23. They took Gabriel Hughes 10th overall in 2022. Obviously, they're just coming off a draft where they had Charlie Condon at 3, but I still think that if you wanted to make the case that Seth Hernandez had the best, like, pure upside in the class at this point, you easily could. It's a much riskier demographic than really all of the four surrounding him, I think, just based on like how the draft has worked historically. But he has monstrous upside, a lot of velocity, a phenomenal changeup. He can spin the ball. He's athletic. He throws strikes. It's a great frame. I think he just checks a lot of boxes. And really, like, me and Ben were talking about Jackson Jobe recently on a future projection podcast. I think Hernandez at this point has the best shot to match or exceed that draft capital for a high school righty of anyone we've seen in years. Like, I think Dylan Lesko was trending in that direction before he got hurt in his draft year. And I view Hernandez as a similar talent to where Jobe ended up and where Lesko was before his injury. I don't think that's a hot take, but he's one of the better high school pitchers we've seen in a few years.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I mean, in so many ways, Hernandez is kind of what it looks like. You mentioned it's a great body, projection remaining, feel the spin up to 98, 99 with good underlying traits. And you said, I think it's not the, I'd say, flashiest or sexiest pitch in the amateur space, whether it be high school or college, but the fact that he does have this double plus changeup in his back pocket already, I think is a really appealing aspect and kind of a nice cherry on top to Hernandez's profile. And so much about him screams potential number one starter if he's able to achieve his ceiling. And him going to Colorado would be a, I know it would get people buzzing, but
yeah,
man, if that happens,
I think people really overreact to the Colorado pitcher thing.
Oh, maybe it's
like a lot of people who are just really invested in fantasy. Like, if they like pitchers, they just don't want to see them go to Colorado. But like, I mean, there are a lot of pitchers who've come up and been fine in Colorado's system. I think it is overblown. The park plays much less hitter heavy now with like the humidor than it used to. Like, it is still not the best environment, obviously, but they're going to draft pitchers like every other team has to draft pitchers. Like you got to fill them out. So I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I'm still very excited about Chase Dolander, despite that the Rockies drafted him. You know.
Yeah, to your point, I'm so glad you brought that up because sure, the ball flies a little bit in cores and whatnot, but it's not this. And you said this is not to like add anyone or whatnot. Sure, it's not the most fun environment, I guess, to pitch in, but it's not this like impossible to succeed in environment that some people make it out to be. It's not a death sentence for pitchers. Mm-hmm. And also to your point, we're so far away and eons away, but thinking about, you know, you have Chase Dolander now who's had incredible success in that system. And if it is Hernandez at four, that's a really, I'd say, dynamic high upside duo that could potentially headline a rotation, mm-hmm. In a couple of years. And, Hernandez is obviously going to be further away than Dolander, and Dolander's on track to make his debut potentially years before Hernandez does. But man, that's a big time duo to have at the top of your rotation, whether you play at Coors Field or not. But I'm glad you brought that up because I think that it's so overblown and almost a tired argument that like you can't pitch at Coors, it's impossible to pitch at. It bugs me. But I guess, and also scrolling through, the other demographic that kind of piques my interest a little bit is that trio of college catchers with Ike Irish, Caden Bodine, and Luke Stevenson, and how they're going to kind of, you know, position themselves throughout the season. Up
because there are three players that I was going to mention as guys who like got some good feedback as, oh, they should definitely be in there as players that were like kind of on the fringe for me, like could easily see them, but wasn't as convicted as maybe like the top 20 or so. One was Luke Stevenson. The other was Henry Godbout, a second baseman at Virginia. And the third was Merrick Houston, shortstop at Wake Forest. We can talk more about those, but please continue with the catchers because just, I think it's a really good college catching class. And Luke Stevenson has a more compelling profile, like after doing this versus like my thoughts on Luke Stevenson before like going through this and writing more about him and watching a little bit more video. It's a pretty appealing package.
Yeah. It's kind of pick your poison with the three, and everyone's appealing and has their argument to be this top catcher, I'd say, for their own reasoning. Like Ike Irish offensively, it's a really appealing hit power blend, but like defensively, I have my own questions about him. Fundamentally, it's not the greatest look. The footwork can kind of get out of whack. The blocking and framing certainly need work, but as you alluded to, he could be behind the dish more full time for Auburn this spring. And then with Bodine, it's a plus hit, but the hit tool is pretty far ahead of the power profile. And it's certainly more gap to gap than it is over the fence power. And it's going to be that way because physically he's a finished product. He's got an above average arm. I really like the fundamentals that he displays behind the plate. He receives the ball well, he corrals balls in the dirt. And then Luke Stevenson, for me right now, he might be my top catcher of the three in the draft. I think in terms of well-roundedness, it's hard to top. Like he's got the hit power blend at the plate. He's got a knack for being on the barrel. He can generate quality contact to all fields. There's some over the fence pop in there. And then defensively, it's a really appealing package. He's got an above average, if not plus arm. He receives the ball really well. He's got a knack for stealing strikes. He calls a great game and can manage a high-level pitching staff. And then intangibly, just I haven't been fortunate enough to get an in-person look at him yet, but just looking at him at UNC and watching some of their games, you know, he's a leader out there. And I think that's a you either have it or you don't type of quality, like that assertiveness behind the plate. Ethan Salas has it, and that's not to say that Luke Stevenson is like Ethan Salas, but like when we interviewed Ethan Salas on the Hot Sheet show, and you know he wasn't intimidated at all in the Arizona Fall League or in Double A to discuss and talk with a veteran pitching staff. But the age discrepancy isn't like that in college. But like Stevenson's a leader. Like for me, he's the top catcher, and I'm curious to see where someone like that or whoever the top catcher ends up being and whoever's picking his eyes, I guess, goes. But that's a fun demographic and kind of horse race that I'm going to be watching this spring.
Yeah. So the other two I wanted to mention, like I said, Merrick Houston, shortstop Wake Forest, and then Henry Godbout at Virginia, two ACC infielders that seem to be getting a lot more steam in the fall about being like definite first rounders for some people. I'm not sure that it's consensus across the board, but I would say like entering this, I didn't have Merrick like locked into my top 30 because like there's no doubting the defense. He was a top three defensive infielder on our 2024 College All-America polling by scouting directors as an underclassman. He's probably one of the better defensive shortstops in this college class. Maybe we'll see where he goes if we draft our tools for players in this class like we've done in the offseason. That's been fun. But like just the impact and the offensive profile, I wasn't sure like if that was going to be enough for him to definitely be in the first round. So that's why I had him towards the back end here. But if you compare him to a guy like Kalen Culpepper, I'm not sure they're two totally dissimilar profiles. Maybe you got more bat speed with a guy like Culpepper. I don't think you've got a ton of power, but it's more contact oriented. And I think Merrick is a better defensive shortstop. So once people were giving me feedback to put him in, I was like, yeah, that makes some sense. But I'm curious if you have any thoughts on Houston or Godbout or any players that you feel like might be guys that are kind of fringy first rounders now, either need to take a step forward or need to just double down to make sure they stay in. It is always tricky putting high school pitchers in the first round. Seth Hernandez was a no-brainer. But after that, guys like Landon Harmon and Cameron Appenzeller are players that I just love personally. I think Harmon is maybe closer to being a consensus guy there now. And Cameron Appenzeller, I just feel like has all of the traits that I could easily see him making a massive jump forward after being like a really exciting upper prospect this summer. So I'm kind of like shooting my shot with these guys, even though there are some scouts who are really high on them and wouldn't see them as out of place by any means. But I think definitely putting high school pitchers in the first round this far out is the profile that would typically be most scary. But take all of that wherever you want to go, Peter, if you have any thoughts. And
yeah, I'd say starting with Godbout and Houston, Houston's a really interesting profile. You know, he's got this pro body. He's a comfortably plus defender, as you alluded to. It's what it looks like at shortstop. He's a pro shortstop through and through. Probably an above average hit tool with plus bat to ball skills. Last year, I think he had an end zone contact rate of 92%. Really advanced swing decisions and pitch recognition skills on the Cape. I think he had a chase rate of just 16%, and then 8% when focusing just on sliders, which is a really impressive mark. The biggest question for him right now is the impact and how much is in there. There was a little bit of pull side thump during the spring, like not to beat around the bush a little bit. Wake is a really hitter friendly park. They're using metal bats, obviously, and the ball flies there. With Wood, right now, for me, it's below average, but not to sound like a creep, but like in scrolling on social media and like seeing Wake baseball posts and stuff, he's gotten a lot bigger since last spring and over the summer. It looks like he's put on a lot of really good weight. I'm curious to see how that translates in the impact department, if it does. Mm-hmm. But regardless, I think the impact that you're going to get with Houston, like you can't have him be a non-factor extra base hit and home run wise, which I don't think he'll be, but you're buying the hit tool, you're buying the defense. Like, I mean, I think he fits in the first round. And then with Godbout, it's not this super pretty, not this super sexy, like no doubt shortstop profile. He's a second baseman, I think, through and through. But it's as hitterish as it looks. I'd say in the box, and he is one of the, I'd say, better pure hit tools in this year's draft. He's got an outstanding feel for the barrel. His bat to ball skills, I think, are closer to a 70 than they are a 60. 92% in zone contact rate last spring, including 95% against fastballs, and he's got no problem with velocity. Hit 556 against fastballs, 93 plus last year. No doubt, six on the hit tool, really quick hands, knack for being on the barrel, adjustability in his swing, and then there's some thump to the pull side. And I think that, you know, last year's max EV form of 106 doesn't necessarily jump off the page, but for me, I think that there's more in the tank. And he did show it with Wood a little bit this summer on the Cape. I think it's a tick below average with Wood, but the hit tool is outstanding with him. And he's a strong defender at second. He'll stick there, I think, professionally. There's range in either direction. He's got an average arm, good clock. And then in kind of further analyzing your question, Cameron Appenzeller is another name for me. I think, not to go out on a huge limb here somewhat, but him being mocked to 23 of the Royals, I think that's what, as we continue to go along throughout the cycle, I think that's the lowest that you're going to have him mocked.
I hope because so. I'm with That'd you. Be great. I like him.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's a lot to like. Projectable left-hander.
Backed off a little bit.
I know, because you had it in the Slack, but I won't spoil it because that's where he might end up in future mocks. But like you said, there's a lot to like. He's a projectable left-hander with starter traits, fastball already up to 94 with a lot more in the tank, and feel the spin a slider and a solid mid-80s changeup. And then I think he's kind of turning into my guy, I guess you could say, early on. But not to keep comparing the two, but I think the gap between Brandon Compton at 29 and someone like a Devin Taylor at 10 really is not all that much. And whether that means
I'm glad you said that. I feel like this college outfield group has been really difficult for me to separate with confidence at this stage. So I'm hoping that they can create a clear pecking order for themselves next spring, because there are a lot of intriguing college hitters who do something similarly, maybe some things differently, have slightly different bodies. But there's like a good depth of outfielders to pick from, and it's a matter of like who's going to go out and improve next spring.
Yeah, so again, there are a lot of already fun, I'd say, underlying storylines to keep an eye on and follow. And I think also in looking through your mock, especially because it was the first time seeing some like it all laid out like this, instead of just looking at a spreadsheet with guys ranked, you could shuffle a lot of these guys any which way, and there are going to be guys that play themselves into the first round like there is every year. But I think there's a lot of room for guys to improve their stock. Certainly there is to hurt themselves as well. But, another guy I've circled is Ivar Arquette at 17. I think if you're looking for like a really, really deep sleeper, maybe not to go 1-1, but inside the top five, depending on how he does at Oregon State. I think he's your guy. There's a lot to like on both sides of the baseball. Really liked him on the Cape. And then that outfield duo at 19 and 20 of Nolan Schubert and Ethan Petrie. It's like, you're going to really see, depending on where they go, in this, you know, how much is their impact and power value, because Schubart has a below average hit tool.
Well, Schubart struck out a lot and hit a lot of home runs, so I put him with the Orioles.
And then with Petrie, he doesn't have the below average hit tool that Schubert does, and the impact that he's able to generate is really impressive, but you could potentially be looking at a right first baseman long term. So like, if you're like, how confident are you that he's going to continue to flash this really high-end hit power combo professionally? So just a lot of fun stuff to follow, and upside guys, and I'm excited to watch it all unfold as we go along here in the cycle.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, I think that's going to wrap it for today. We won't go too long. I know, Peter, you've been working on a bunch of stuff. You probably need to actually decompress here after wrapping up your Padres. You probably got other things you want to do. So we got prospect handbook things to get into, so it's going to be a little shorter than typical for us. I think we are planning to be back here next week, though. I'm sure at some point deeper into December we'll have a week or two off from the pod, but we are inching closer to the college season. Excited for this year's class. You can see all of our draft lottery content on the site now, the full first round mock, the results, the odds. JJ's inside the results story. We've got top 10s rolling out. We're very close to being done with all of our 30 team top 10s at this point. And like Peter said at the outset, definitely look into pre-ordering the prospect handbook. If you have not already, really excited for the product. Getting a chance to read through all these systems now as they're coming in has been a lot of fun, as it always is. And it'll definitely be a lot of information for you guys. So for Peter, I'm Carlos. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for supporting BA. See you guys next time.